WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. Hey, I am your host, Al Martin, always have been. On today's show, we will try to recap the sporting weekend. So much going down. Of course, we will dive into the Michigan State win over Maryland at Spartan Stadium that came with a bit of drama. You don't want to miss our coverage from that. We'll also chat about Michigan State as they open their year, the men's basketball team, I should say, on Friday against Florida Atlantic. You don't want to miss that. We'll also have coverage from the MSU women's basketball game as they took on Western Michigan yesterday. So we were at all three games. We'll give you coverage and interviews from those games. We'll also dive into the entire college football spectrum as, of course, the new rankings for the Associated Press poll were announced yesterday, and Michigan State now moves up from 14 to number 9. We'll also talk a bit of high school football with you guys and give you a breakdown of what occurred on Friday night, and we'll also highlight the teams who are still left with a chance to possibly make their state championship dreams come true. All of that and so much more. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to be a part of today's show, all you have to do is pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, yay, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, November 16th. Folks, it hasn't happened since I was 1 year old. Yep, back in 1991. The Lions finally beat the Packers in Wisconsin at Lambeau Field on Sunday, despite two missed extra points and a failed onside kick attempt. The Lions pulled out the victory over the Cheeseheads, 18-16. Matthew Stafford threw for two touchdowns. The Packers, who are now 6-3, lost their third straight game. But this was a new low after their previous two defeats came on the road to Super Bowl contenders Denver and Carolina. But yet they lose to the lowly Lions. Big win for the Honolulu Blue. We'll have more on that in just a sec. After beating Maryland on Saturday, Michigan State's football team moved up five spots in this week's Associated Press poll. The Spartans now sit at number 9. So it'll be number 9 MSU. At number 2, Ohio State, who are currently undefeated at 10-0 on Saturday at Ohio Stadium, 3:30 p.m. on ABC, with the college football playoff rankings to be announced on Tuesday. Now, Michigan moved up one spot from number 15 to 14 in the AP poll and two spots to number 13 in the college coaches poll after its 48-41 double overtime nail-biter over Indiana. Now, U of M plays at Penn State on Saturday at noon on ABC. In an already rough recruiting week for MSU football recruiting, Hunter Risen of the 2017 class, he announced via Twitter over the weekend that he would be decommitting. Yeah, the Ann Arbor Skyline receiver is the son of MSU great Andre Risen. Risen said in his tweet that he wanted to thank everyone at MSU, but he thinks he committed a bit too early and wants to take more time to decide. The MSU women's basketball team, they topped Western Michigan 78-40 Sunday afternoon in East Lansing. Both Jasmine Hines and Akiah Taylor posted double-doubles for the Spartans, and Tori Jankowska, she added 20 points. The Spartans will face Georgia Wednesday at the Breslin. We were in the house for that Sunday afternoon matchup. We'll have coverage in just a sec. Also, the MSU women's volleyball team, they have now lost seven straight. And a quick update for high school football Friday night. Grand Ledge, they top Rockford 36-16. They were down 16-3 in that game. They will now move on to play Romeo, who is 11-1. In Division 2, Orchard Lake St. Mary's, they beat St. John's 56-14. In Division 5, Lansing Catholic, they top Freehand 25-22. And Lansing Catholic will now move on to play Grand Rapids West Catholic, who is 10-2 on the year. In Division 6, Ithaca, the Yellow Jackets. No surprise here. They beat Langsburg 34-10. They now move on to play Traverse City St. Francis, which is also 12-0 on the year. Clinton, they top Jackson Lumen Christi 49-20. In Division 7, Pomona Westphalia, they beat Cassopolis 40-3. And Detroit Loyola, they laid the smackdown on Dansville 50-0. Loyola will now play PW this Friday. It has been announced this morning that Peyton Manning has a partially torn plantar fascia. He has been battling it for weeks, but it was permanently made worse in the November 8th game. Manning started Sunday's game for the Broncos before being sidelined due to his performance. Gary Kubiak replaced Manning with Brock Osweiler on Sunday, ending one of the worst days of Manning's career, although he did set the NFL record for career passing yards, passing Brett Favre in that accomplishment. Manning was 5 of 20 for just 35 yards and threw 4 picks when he was removed from the game. And last but certainly not least, folks, this story set the sporting world on fire. Ronda Rousey, she lost her first fight this weekend by way of knockout at the hands of Holly Holm in the second round. There were concerns about how much damage the kick to her head was, but she said that she will bounce back. She was hospitalized that same night. In an Instagram post, she said she appreciated the support and her health is fine. She confirmed that she will be taking some time off, but that she will return to the sport soon and will be back. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and weigh in on anything that occurred this weekend in the world of sports, Michigan State, Maryland, if you want to give us a preview of that upcoming matchup against Ohio State this upcoming Saturday, if you want to preview MSU men's basketball, anything on your noggin, you know that number 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It's time to start the show.
Oh, what you gonna do? You wanna get down? Tell me. Oh, what you gonna do? Do you wanna get down? You wanna get out? Oh, what you gonna do? You wanna get out? Tell me.
Get down on it. Get down on it. Get down on it. Get down on it.
Come on in.
Get down on it. Get down on it. Get down on it. Get down on it.
Rodgers, end zone. He's rooting for the hands team for Detroit to make a play. Johnson can't! Randall can! Unbelievable! Through the hands of Calvin Johnson for the win. No good, blocked. And the Lions have won it.
You gotta get on the groove if you want your body to move.
Now Garrett Kings to the left. Shotgun snap to Tyler O'Connor. Takes his time. Fires end zone. It's a bullet. Caught by McGarrett King. Touchdown, MSU. Some pressure throws. It's going to be picked off. Riley Bullis got it on the far sideline. At the 20. At the 15. Riley Bullis at the 10. He's into the end zone. Touchdown, MSU. Got a great block from Darian Hicks.
First and goal at the 3. Hand off to Gerald Holmes. Runs to his right. Baines off a tackler. He goes into the end zone standing up. Touchdown, MSU.
Oh, what you gonna do? Do you want to get down? Oh, what you gonna do?
Get your back up off the wall. Dance. Come on. Get your back up.
Beautiful.
Can she
beautiful.
Catch?
She's hurt.
She's
out.
Holly looking to finish. Holly Holm is the new UFC back-to-back champion of the world.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Un- baby. You know
it. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are now listening to WKAR's Current Sports. It is a pleasure to have you here on this Monday afternoon. I'm in a great mood. I'm so happy because, wow, was that weekend off the charts or what? I mean, wow. I mean, Ronda Rousey going down for the first time in her career at the hands of Holly Holm, a fighter who wasn't even promoted throughout this entire hype machine for the Australia bout. I mean, if you look at all the flyers, Ronda Rousey's face is the only face on the flyers to promote that fight. But yeah, she comes out of nowhere. She actually transitions from boxing to MMA and just gave it to Ronda Rousey. Oh, that was crazy stuff. And it was so interesting watching that night on ESPN SportsCenter. Jonathan Coachman was anchoring that night, and their coverage lasted for like 2 hours at least, extended to 2 hours. They didn't get off the air until about 4 a.m., and I stayed up watching as much as I could of it, and I was listening to Coach's radio show actually on Sunday, and he said, quote, "It was the most challenging SportsCenter I have ever done." That is the type of moment we live as SportsCenter anchors, because, I mean, breaking news, Ronda Rousey, who is like the Mike Tyson of the fighting era, I mean, no one expected Holm to beat Rousey. Nobody expected that. So, I mean, they had post-fight coverage and interviews afterwards. They streamed the press conference. Absolutely unbelievable stuff. And then how about college football earlier on in that day? I mean, it was fantastic. I was glued to my television that entire night as four of the top 10 college football teams went down. How crazy is that? That's why you gotta love college football, folks. You just never know what's going to happen from a week-to-week basis. You had LSU falling to Arkansas. Then you had Stanford losing to Oregon. Then you had Utah losing to Arizona. Then you had Baylor losing to Oklahoma. How nuts was that? And now, looking at, you know, the latest AP rankings, you have Clemson, Ohio State, Bama, and OK State now as your top four teams. Now, of course, tomorrow, the 12-member selection committee will look at the college football, I guess you can say, layout for what occurred on Saturday. And they're really going to break it down. And I think you may see a bit of a shakeup from last week, of course, to this week because of those upsets. I think that's pretty much inevitable. And you have Michigan State, a team that you talk about drama and intrigue in a college football game. Of course, the storyline of the Michigan State and Maryland matchup on Saturday had to be the health of Connor Cook. After taking that hit in the first half in which he landed awkwardly on that right shoulder, it left him a bit off his rocker, a bit off his game. He had to be helped off the field. You saw the footage of Sally Nogle on the sideline trying to diagnose how bad the pain was and whether or not Connor Cook could go on and play in that game. You know, there's a video of him on the sideline, and Sally is trying to figure out what's going on, and she hits a wrong spot in that right shoulder, and immediately Connor Cook bends over in pain. It's just an odd game because also when you look at how that game went, I mean, Michigan State, they took possession of the football at the Maryland 44-yard line four times, folks. Count them. Four times. Due to just horrendous punts by the Maryland special teams. And they can only score on just three of those four opportunities. How crazy is that, right? Just absolutely insane. Riley Bulla, of course, for the defense, he was big. He had a pick six that he took to the house. 10 players carried the ball on the ground for Michigan State for a total of 141 yards. Of course, who got the most of those 141 yards were Gerald Holmes. He had 83 of those 141 yards for Michigan State on the ground. I think he's been looking great from week to week to week, but I do think that the Michigan State ground game has to become more consistent. But I want to play for you guys our post-game report, our coverage from that game, Michigan State beating Maryland, and now they sit at 9-1 as they will hit the road to travel to Columbus, Ohio to take on the undefeated national champs, Ohio State Buckeyes. Here was my postgame report from that game, though, on Saturday at Spartan Stadium.
Just like it's played out all year, Michigan State got the win at home, but it did not come without a bit of drama. Senior quarterback Connor Cook took a sack in the first half that resulted in a right shoulder injury. He did not get the start in the second, and it was news that he was not pleased about, actually seen on camera slamming down his helmet. So what does this latest plot twist mean for the Spartan story?
I felt like I could have gone. Felt confident in my abilities and in my arm and in my health. But Coach G just wanted to, you know, play it safe and just keep me on the sideline for precautionary reasons.
Connor, I apologize you've been asked about the injury, but what happened on the play, and then how much was that bothering you after you came back into the game?
Just landed on it funny, and just kind of felt a little just weak at that point, and then came off the sideline, got it checked out. There was nothing serious, nothing wrong, went back in, and it really didn't affect me at all. I mean, there was a little pain here and there, but I mean, it was nothing where I couldn't, you know, deliver a pass.
If we would have just chosen to run the football, he could have hung in there, but I just don't think he had the velocity on his ball that he usually has, and I think that was bothering him. That's my personal opinion. I think he was frustrated with that. So, you know, we went in the other direction.
Being a competitive guy, you know, and the success that Connor Cook has, you know, just getting hurt and not being able to play, that's going to always, you know, say hit home. But, you know, having a teammate who can back him up pretty good, that's always, you know, saying good feeling.
It was kind of maybe like a trial version of, you know, I'll be ready to go in case that were to happen. But obviously praying for Connor, make sure he can play next week. And I think it was very precautionary in the second half for him not to play, which was very understanding. But it made me feel better that the coaches had enough trust in me to put the game pretty much in my hands in the second half.
I just felt like that's what I wanted to do. Sometimes you get to be the head coach, you can do things. I felt like it was good field position, and I watched, you know, this was the time. You know, this was the time. There was a reason behind it, and that's what we did.
Now, there are a few areas to this conversation that makes this whole situation with Connor Cook even more intriguing. Now, as you guys saw, during that game, Connor Cook got the start. But during the second drive of that game, head coach Mark D'Antonio decided to call on the number of Tyler O'Connor. No one knew that Coach D was going to do this. As he stated in his press conference, no one knew it, not even his assistant coaching staff. It took everyone by surprise. And as you heard Coach D, he said, hey, sometimes when you're the head coach, you get to do stuff like that. So even it really caught Tyler O'Connor off guard as well. As he stated in the presser, I mean, he didn't know he was going in, just like the media didn't know he was going in, or the assistant coaching staff didn't know he was going in. It was a shock to even him. He had no idea. So Tyler goes in. He actually leads the team to a TD. And then all of a sudden, Connor Cook goes back in, and he gets injured in that first half. Again, he takes a hit in the backfield. He goes down, injures that right shoulder. He goes out of the game. And you can tell that he just wasn't himself. And because he goes back in the game in that first half, I mean, you can tell that he was laboring and sort of catering to that injury on every single throw. Looking down the field, if there was pressure on him, he was making sure to brace that right shoulder. So then halftime hits, and Mark D'Antonio decides, you know what, we're shutting down Connor Cook, and we're throwing in Tyler O'Connor for the rest of the second half. Connor Cook finished 6 of 20 for 77 yards and, you know, had a long play of, 28 yards on the day. So that was his day. It was kaput. And as I stated in my report, you could see the ESPN cameras pan to Connor Cook right before that second half started, in which, of course, Connor Cook didn't get the start. O'Connor did. And you could see Connor Cook on the sideline slam his helmet and throw it on the ground. He was not pleased, folks. So a lot of different layers of this conversation. And the final layer of it was, of course, the post-game press conference. Everybody wants to know what went into the mindset of Coach D just out of nowhere throwing in Tyler O'Connor on that second drive of the game. What went into his mindset? Why did he do it? And also a status as to the update on Connor Cook's injury and as to why he did not start the second half. So in the postgame presser, there was conflicting opinions here because Connor Cook, he takes the podium first before Coach Steve even walks in. Coach Steve's getting interviewed for radio. And Connor Cook says that, you know what? I felt confident. I felt as though I could have started that second half. I felt as though I could have played. But Coach D'Antonio felt otherwise, so he decided that the best option was for me to sit out. That's what Connor Cook had to say. You just heard it. So Coach D'Antonio walks in the press conference and addresses the media, and there's a bit of a twist to it because Coach D says that Connor Cook felt as though he couldn't go, so we made a mutual decision between him and I to sit him out in that second half. Oh, that's not exactly what Connor had to say when he first took the podium. So I don't know what was going on there. Clearly, Coach D and Cook, they weren't on the same page as to the story of what they were going to roll with and tell the media with when it comes to the postgame presser. So that was a bit weird. And also, now moving forward for this team, you know, how bad is that Connor Cook injury? When Mark D'Antonio takes the podium for his weekly press conference tomorrow morning at Spartan Stadium, you better believe that Coach D is not going to give us the full story, okay? Even if there isn't a story to be given, let's say Connor Cook is fine, that the injury is healing just right, and he's going to be pretty much, you know, good. He's going to be good to go for Saturday, which I think he is. I think he's going to play and start that game against Ohio State this Saturday. But Coach D'Antonio, even if Connor Cook was 100% healthy heading into that matchup this weekend, he's not going to tell us that. Coach D hates discussing injuries. He's going to give us nothing as far as updating us on the status of Connor Cook. I can pretty much guarantee he's going to give us some cliche answer about how Connor Cook is progressing very well and how he's going to be ready to go that Saturday. That's exactly what Coach D'Antonio was going to say. That's it. You're not getting any specifics. Even if it's worse than that, if Connor Cook is really laboring right now and is really having a hard time adjusting to that injury, Mark D'Antonio is not going to say that. Point blank, period. But at the same time, it was also intriguing because out of nowhere, Coach D decides to just throw in Tyler O'Connor. I don't know. I still, right now, I wanted to jog my memory about it, you know, on Sunday and after just letting the game settle in a bit. And I wanted to ask myself, why would Coach D do that? And I still have no answer. No answer whatsoever. Again, it came as a shock to everyone out there to throw Tyler O'Connor in during that second drive. But nonetheless, when it's said and done, Michigan State, they get the win. And that's the biggest thing. They are 9-1 heading into this weekend's matchup in Buckeye territory at the Shoe, undefeated Ohio State, the defending national champions. This game, again, and I'm sticking to this, if Michigan State beats Ohio State, it's going to be very hard for voters out there not to put Michigan State into the playoff automatically. But there are some things that have to tidy up if Michigan State wants to pull out that dub on the road. First off, they're on the road. A hostile environment. They're in Ohio State territory. JT Barrett is going to be the starter for the Buckeyes now. And I truly believe that JT Barrett gives Ohio State the best chance to win. Ohio State's defense hasn't looked great this year. I will say that. You could definitely throw some points up on them, but it's going to rest on the arm of Connor Cook. If Connor Cook looks like the Cook that we've been seeing for most of this year, I think Michigan State is going to be just fine, especially looking at how the secondary played this past weekend. Now, again, it is against Maryland, for goodness sake. But at the same time, you saw guys like Monte Nicholson, Darian Hicks. I mean, those guys were fantastic in the secondary. Riley Bulla, Arjun Calhoun had an interception on the day as well. I was really impressed. If looking at the positive side of things, I was very impressed with that Michigan State secondary. The last 13 possessions for Maryland, they didn't score at all. Point blank, period. Again, Bulla, Calhoun, Nicholson, they all had interceptions on the day. So that was very, 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 you know, good for Michigan State. It's because I tell you what, that secondary, again, that's been the chink in the armor for the Spartans all season long. And let's be real here, folks. Maryland really gave Michigan State that game, too. Five turnovers for Maryland. That's not going to get it done. I mean, and they hung in there. And they hung in there due to Michigan State's offense not getting into any sort of a lather. But if Michigan State's offense plays like it did Saturday, they will get beat out in Ohio State. But just a very odd game, though, folks. And we encourage you all to weigh in on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I believe we do have Ray on the line. But before we get to Ray, I want to get your thoughts, Isaac, on Saturday's game. You were in the house covering it as well with me. What did you think of Michigan State's performance?
You know, to be honest, it's not to say I was impressed, but I was convinced. This is the first win of the season for Michigan State where no matter how skeptical you are, you couldn't really draw it up to some fluke. Michigan State was obviously the better team. Tyler O'Connor actually really impressed me, especially on that touchdown pass to McGarrett Kings. He went through his reads. He evaluated all the options before settling on that, made a nice throw right into the breadbasket. And I thought Michigan State looked pretty good. The secondary shaped up finally a little bit. And I think Michigan State's in a good position to go into Ohio State. But like you were saying, Al, the big story is how healthy is Connor Cook? Obviously, there were conflicting reports on that. And against Ohio State, listen, I thought Tyler O'Connor looked fine. But they're going to need Connor Cook. They're going to need full strength Connor Cook to even have a chance. And Michigan State's lack of impressive wins, and this one also was a little bit lackluster, it means that Michigan State, they need a full-strength roster, and they need a real impressive outing, some luck bouncing their way as well to beat Ohio State without a full-strength Connor Cook. I'm not sure if they can do that.
Yeah, and you know what? The other aspect to what really gets that offense going, Cook is more comfortable, and for any quarterback for that matter, a quarterback is more comfortable when they don't feel like the weight of the world is always on their shoulders. If they have a good running game, that also allows Michigan State to get that sort of balance. When they have a balanced offense, Cook plays tremendously better. Because right now, I'm really not convinced. When you really break down Michigan State's rushing attack on Saturday, I wasn't impressed. And there have been times where I haven't been impressed with what they've been able to do on the ground. Now, when looking at the talent they have in that backfield, I really like L.J. Scott. I really love Gerald Holmes, who seems like he's becoming the number one back. And L.J. Scott just had a bad game. Bad game on Saturday. I mean, like the first time he touches the football, he turns the ball over. But Gerald Holmes, 18 carries for 87 yards. Michigan State has to get that run game going against Ohio State if they want a chance at beating them, because it allows their offense not to be so predictable. And it takes pressure off Cook, again, a guy who right now we don't know the extent of his injury. It allows him to settle into the game more if instead of him just coming in and having to deliver it with his arm right off the bat. So it's going to be a fun game this weekend. I encourage you all to call in and give your thoughts on it. And also, if you got thoughts on Michigan State's performance against Maryland this past weekend, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go. We have two callers on the line right now. We'll go to Ray, then Jody. Ray, right now on line one. How you doing, Ray?
Well, what do you think of the football games over the weekend?
Oh, unbelievable weekend. This is what makes college football so intriguing, Ray. I mean, you had, again, four of the top 10 college football teams go down in one day. That's insane. Insane to me, Ray.
Well, I'll tell you, Connor Cook, you don't have him healthy, you have no chance in that game. You'll be 9-2 if you don't get a running game going, too.
I agree.
That running game, you got to get better. I mean, you can't. Is any of your offensive linemen back lately?
Well, yeah, they do have him back, but again, they're still battered though when it comes to that front line. So they're not 100%, and I think we're starting to see that. I mean, holes aren't opening up for those running backs to run through, and that's just the simplicity of it.
Well, let's go to the Bullies. The Bullies got lucky again Saturday. I mean, that's two in a row. They must be the luckiest team in America. Minnesota and Indiana had them beat. They got a fourth down and five on the thing. They throw a lob pass into the end zone. You know they got to go to the end zone. And you got two defensive backs there, and neither one of them went for the ball to knock it down. Can you believe that play?
It was, you know, that game, period, Ray. Unbelievable. I really thought Indiana had that one in the bag. And
they ran all over Michigan.
Yeah, Indiana really gave him that game. You got to give a lot of credit to Jake Rudock, though. I thought Jake Rudock, he made some clutch plays down the stretch, didn't he? Some throws that we normally haven't seen him make. And he was able to,
he throws a lot of balls up. They just don't get in position, the defensive backs, to pick him off on Indiana. I don't think he'll get away with that this week with Penn State or Ohio State.
No, I don't think so either. But still, I've been very impressed with Jake Rudock throughout this season. I think that Jake has gotten better week to week to week. But Indiana really gave Michigan that game down the stretch, Ray.
Minnesota and Northwestern always find a way to lose those games at the end of the games, and they always do.
Yeah, certainly.
That's why it's a joke in the Big Ten. But I want to go to New England next. I'm frustrated about Brady somehow pulling that game out. They blew that call. I couldn't believe that they didn't run those balls. And the catch, he's got 4 feet steps down before the guy knocks the ball out. I don't know what a touchdown catch is anymore.
You know, I tweeted this out when I saw the initial catch from Odell Beckham Jr., excuse me. When Odell caught the ball, he didn't complete the process. That's the complete the process rule. You have to maintain possession as you're coming down with it, and he just didn't. The ball was knocked out.
He had four steps before they knocked the ball out.
Yeah, he had two down, but again, you had to still complete the process as you come out of that play. He didn't make a football move, quote unquote.
But he wasn't going to the ground. He still kept his balance. He never went to the ground on that
but
play.
But right, he caught the football. No doubt about it. He caught the football, but as he was hauling it in, right as he was about to get that second foot down, that's when the ball was dislodged. And according to the football rule, completing the process, you have to complete the process and you have to come down fully with it and at least make a quote-unquote football move. That's like the key wordage. Again, it's a ridiculous rule in the NFL, one that I don't agree with, but it's how they have to stay consistent with it. So it wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised that they didn't call that a touchdown.
Didn't the Lion guy have the same play they said and they counted
it
a touchdown?
It goes back to, of course, remember that Chicago Bears and Detroit Lions game with Megatron?
Right.
That's where this whole fiasco was started. So
Calvin Johnson.
Yeah. Hey Ray, great call. Appreciate it, my man.
Hey, one other.
Oh, go ahead. You have one more? Go ahead.
They dropped that interception too. You know, they had Brady threw that ball under, threw it 10 yards. You got to hang on to that ball. He's got it until he hits the ground. But he did drop the ball. You know,
he did. And you know, it was a heck of a catch. It looked like he was going to come down with it. He was like parallel to the ground. But again, he comes down and the ball hits the turf. That's it. And again, and I also tweeted last night. I mean, if you're going to win, you have to make plays like that against Tom Brady and the Patriots because if you don't convert on those things. Oh, it was a great game.
Heck of a game.
Great game. And great call. Appreciate it, Ray.
All right, buddy.
Line two, we've got Jody. Jody, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Sounds like there's some static between here and Cass.
Maybe, yeah. You're kind of breaking up on us right now, Jody. No, you're good.
Yeah, but I'll be brief then. It's Ohio State week, man. It's time for the Buckeyes. You're right. We can go ahead and review because I know that's what you have to do. But this is, you know, Scarlet and Gray week, and this week, Michigan week, Notre Dame week. We're about the only three, and I shouldn't say the only 3 weeks because you got to, you know, you got tuned in for everything. But those three meant a little more. Maybe me being from Ohio, you know, you want to see the Spartans do well, and just being a Spartan, you know, you want to see them do well. Hopefully, the secondary will play well if Cook can play. They may just have to try to outscore Ohio State. I know, you know, with some guys beat up in the offensive line, you know, you can't go. And regardless what team it is, you know, no matter who's, you know, who's being recruited and how many stars you have, you know, and you're under your recruiting thing, once you start going into your second and third string of players, there's going to be a drop off, folks. You know, that's just, you know, no matter who it is.
Right.
But hopefully, you know, there's guys are healthy and they play well Saturday. Another thing, we ran into Greg Jones, former Spartan, up in Hamilton this past week. We were downtown Hamilton and the Argos were coming out. Very nice young man.
Very nice young man. I was very impressed with him. They lost to Hamilton, Toronto Argos, but you know, up here that's what we, you know, that's what we see along with the NFL and the college games. But I just wanted to, you know, to really give a little shout out, some kudos to Greg Jones. Like I say, a quality young man.
Yeah, I dig that. I dig that. And before we get you out of here, Jody, I mean, you being from Ohio, I mean, what do you think is gonna happen in this game? What do you got, Ohio State or Michigan State?
And, you know, having walked away from Woody Hayes back in the 70s, you know, I bleed green and white, you know. So of course I'm hearing all the trash from all my Ohio brothers. You go, when you go, take a look at my page this week, man. You'll probably start rolling. You might even have a show you can do just on my fans.
Just on your Facebook page, huh? Oh my goodness, that is hilarious.
Go to my page. You have some jokes, man. Because I mean, it's gonna be brutal. But that's just how people are in Ohio about their football. You know, they're that way.
Die hard. Well, it's going to be a good game, and I think it's going to come down to the final few minutes and whoever has that last possession, in my opinion, and Jody.
Yeah, and last thing, man, did Rhonda wake up yet?
Oh, my goodness.
That girl went to work on her.
She did.
All shuffled and all.
And you know what? That's big. If there's any criticism of Ronda Rousey's game, it's her standing up, sparring, you know? And that's exactly what was exposed during that fight. I mean, Holly Holm, who has a boxing background, she was able to just pick and choose where she wanted to hit Ronda. And that's exactly what happened. She got dazed and confused. We've never really seen Ronda after Ronda fight in a fight that long. I mean, usually her fights last about 60 seconds and that's it. But after that first round, I mean, her face was so bloody. So bloody. She was dazed and confused before she even started the second, Jody, and we saw what happened, how it ended.
Oh, man, that girl was throwing jabs, and I mean, she was ollieing her and was moving and pop, 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 boom, boom, boom. Whoa.
I mean, the
bad part is I turned the fight off before it got to the headliner because my wife was sleeping, and I knew the last time something like that happened, I woke her up when I was screaming, and she had to get up in the morning. So I'm trying to be a nice husband. I turn it all off, go to bed. I wake up in the next morning and see she and Ramsey lost. And my wife was, well, you know you could. I'm like, girl, if you'd have heard me screaming, you'd have fell out the bed.
Exactly. It would have been a problem, right?
Yeah,
oh, my goodness. Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you would have watched that fight, Jody, you would have probably woke up your neighbors. I'm sure.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, because I live around some retirees and it's kind of quiet, so that's all, yeah. They might have thought something was going on, you know, but yeah. But like I said, it was just watching it, I wondered, did they really kind of send Ronda Rousey through a thing of where she was beating up people that they, you know, they handpicked type opponents for her, and I don't know why they even put her in the ring with that girl.
I'm telling you, she is a beast.
I looked at that and I was like, oh my goodness, who in the world was sleeping and put her? I wouldn't have put her in the ring with her for about two or three more years and made more money off of her.
But you know what? I respect that Ronda she's always been like this throughout her career. She will fight anybody. Anybody, and that's one thing I respect about her. She stands up to a challenge, no matter if there is a chance of her losing, as it was greatly in this matchup against Holly Holm.
Ow, as I'm laughing. Come on now.
I'm telling you. I'm just saying, Jody. And this is what hurt. And I'm serious about it because this is what has hurt fighting, in my opinion, and more so specifically when it comes to the sport of boxing. We have a lot of fighters out there who are afraid of having that etch in the loss column and not giving the fans what they deserve, and that's to see the best of the best fight. When it comes to UFC, you don't see that. You see guys, if your record is where it's at and you feel like you can knock me off, you don't see UFC fighters back down from that challenge, i.e., Floyd Mayweather. You know I was going with that one. I believe Floyd has ducked and dodged throughout his entire career, and it has made for boring TV, but he also is a businessman because he has hyped those matchups so much. The fights that he has dodged, he has waited 5 years down the line to where that opponent has become old and not what they used to be, and then just took him to town in the ring, which is not good for the average fan out there.
But, you know, I'll say this and I'll leave it too. You look at it, though, man, it's become that way in everything, though. You know, college teams don't schedule top 10 opponents anymore.
Look at Baylor. You know? Look at Baylor right now. I mean, they scheduled a bunch of lollipops on their schedule and got exposed. Point blank, period. Yeah.
I mean, not knocking the Buckeyes because I know I'll hear about it, but, I mean, they played Virginia Tech and then the Big Ten. I mean, come on. I mean, you haven't seen Ohio State Notre Dame and Ohio State Alabama. You saw it in the 10th. But I'm just saying, you know, back in the day, you were required. You know, we had a Notre Dame, we had a Southern Cal with 35 pros on their team on our schedule one year.
Right.
And a Joe Montana Notre Dame team. And, I mean, it's like, come on now.
Exactly.
There were no, no offense to the smaller schools, but you didn't play. I don't know why. You just didn't play them back then because there wasn't as much maybe at stake with the playoffs and all this bowl money and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's the point I wanted to make. I mean, yeah, the reason why you're seeing it now is because the college football playoff now, it weighs so heavily on what your record is, but also, again, that's why I think it's so important this year to really look at how the 12-member committee selects these last four teams to compete in the playoff, because they have to look, and I think this needs to be stressed upon, they have to look at strength of schedule. That's so important, so important. If they overlook that, shame on them. I'm just saying, Jody.
Oh, you're right. All right, man, I'll talk to you later, and like I say, it's Ohio State week. Come on, Spartans.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. Thanks a lot, Jody.
Oh, yeah.
Always a great call, man. You too.
All right.
All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk a little hoops. That's right, the MSU women's basketball team, they get a nice dub against Western at home at the Breslin. Also, the MSU men's basketball team, they beat Ferris State Florida Atlantic on Friday night. We'll have that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Make it 31 season opening wins for Michigan State as they top Florida Atlantic here at the Breslin Center. And I guess you can say two Owls return to the nest tonight as the head coach for FAU is Michael Curry, former Detroit Pistons head coach and player. And also on that assistant coaching staff is Eric Snow, former Michigan State hoop great. Michigan State might have spoiled this homecoming affair, but no hard feelings.
Tom, what was the conversation like that you had with Eric Snow after the game in the line, and what's it like to see him now become a coach?
I'm proud of Eric. You know, I was proud of him when he was a player here. He was an overachiever. He made himself a player. To think that guy had a 13-year NBA career, whatever he had, is unbelievable. Michael Curry's a good friend. Last time I was with Michael, he flew me to Penn State, and we watched his son play and our Spartans play, and it was he's just an incredible guy.
Our goal is to have a strong out-of-conference schedule. Playing teams like Michigan State, Tennessee, and Florida State helps us recruit those kids that are being recruited by Power Five conferences, that they can come to us and play right away. We'll put a schedule together where they can compete against them.
What are those pinpoint areas to make sure you tidy up before you hit the road in game two?
Yeah, definitely free throws. We shot like 60% from the line. We can't do that. In big games, that's going to hurt us down the stretch. So we got to be better at the free throw line and the foolish turnovers. We can't have them either.
I think we need to do a better job at moving the ball. And we had a couple silly turnovers. There's sometimes turnovers that are good turnovers and they're bad turnovers. I think we had a couple of bad turnovers, but other than that, we played pretty solid. We can always get better.
Last year, the Kansas Jayhawks topped Michigan State in the Orlando Classic out in Florida, but the Spartans now, in game two of the season, have a chance at a bit of redemption as they will play the Jayhawks in Chicago at the Champions Classic.
I'm really looking forward to maybe arguably one of the greatest nights of college basketball when you look at how this has been over the years between Duke and Kentucky and us in Kansas, and that's the kind of places I want to be in those kind of venues. I think that's great for Michigan State.
Yes, it certainly is. Again, Michigan State will take on Kansas tomorrow night at 10 p.m. If you have to wake up early on Wednesday morning, please set your alarms, because if you are staying up for that game, it probably won't end until around midnight that night, okay? But a great opening game for Michigan State at the Breslin Center on Friday night. A few things to note here. Again, number 13, Michigan State, they moved to 93-24 all-time in season openers, winning 36 of the last 39. Michigan State has won 31 straight openers at home, including 16 under Tom Izzo, who is 18-3 in season openers. They moved to 5-0, including 4-0 at home. Also, with 13 points, senior guard Denzel Valentine moves into 44th all-time among Spartan scorers with a little over 1,000, 1,063 to be exact, passing Marcus Sanders Irvin Johnson, and Johnny Green. So pretty cool stuff there. And Denzel Valentine, I tell you what, he is having a fantastic stretch so far to start the season. It really looks like he is going to have a special year, folks. Of course, ESPN came out with their college basketball individual player rankings before the season officially started, and they listed Denzel as the number three player on that list. On Friday night, he had 8 rebounds, 13 points, 9 assists. But I have to be honest here. I mean, again, when looking at the overall picture, other than Denzel Valentine, Deontay Davis really looks like he is going to be a big, big, big contributor for this team. Actually, when looking at Friday's game for Deontay Davis, he was 6 of 14 for 11 rebounds and 13 points, a double-double. He is just the third Spartan freshman in Michigan State history to record a double-double in his season debut. Again, just the third Spartan in program history to do that. Also, his 11 rebound night ranks second in MSU's all-time freshman debut history, passing Matt Steginga and Ben Tower, who each posted 10. Impressive stuff. And what really impresses me about Deontay is that, first off, he's only a freshman, folks. He's going to get better as the season moves along and as his career progresses here as a Spartan. And how long he is down low. I mean, when guys drive on him, his long arms enable him to have a chance at blocking pretty much every single shot. You know, Tom Izzo joked at Media Day before the season began on how Deontay Davis is this really shy kid who really doesn't like to talk to the media. He's kind of, you know, he's really timid in that regard when it comes to talking and really expressing himself. But when he's on the basketball court, oh my goodness, that completely goes out the window. We've seen a lot of emotion from Deontay. He really gets amped up when he makes a big play. He's a pretty solid defender down low. He can't get better with his footwork, but Deontay Davis is going to be a player that is going to make a tremendous stamp on this team, especially as March rolls along. And I think this is a really cool early test for the Spartans as they go out and play Kansas in the Shy at the Champions Classic. Tom Izzo is known for scheduling tough teams at the beginning of the year to test this team and to sort of pick out, you know, where those holes are in the boat so that he can plug them as the season moves along. Going to be a very intriguing game, though. Isaac, it's fun watching this kid play. I actually got a chance to see Deontay when he was a player in high school for Muskegon. I actually saw him and Trevor Manuel play as Muskegon took on Lansing Everett in the playoffs, and he was just as impressive as he was on Friday as well, and has been so far.
Well, the most terrifying thing is that he was considered more of a prospect, not immediately ready to go. You know, he's a little bit skinny for a big man, but obviously he showed that he can grind on the boards. 8 offensive rebounds. I'd be shocked if that's not an MSU record for a debut. And Deontay Davis also 5 blocks in that game, 13 points, like you mentioned. He certainly stood out. Also, Matt McQuaid, the freshman, looked good on offense. He only attempted 1 shot, hit it, 3 assists. Very efficient. He looks to fit right into the system perfectly. And Matt Costello as well. Big man. The Michigan State, one weakness last year was there was inconsistency at that center position, whether it was Matt Costello or Gavin Schilling. One player always provides something that the other didn't. This year, I do not think that will be a problem whatsoever for the Spartans. Between the rotation of Costello, Davis, and Schilling, they've got all sides of the coin covered. And I think just as much, MSU looked to have that point guard position resolved. Tum Tum Nairn looked good in the game, 3 of 5. And it's an exciting time to be a Spartan basketball fan or cover Spartan basketball because this team really seems to have come together very well. And we're only 1 game into the season. You saw Michigan State almost stutter out of the gates to start last year. A lot of close wins, and that's traditional. That's almost the way it always happens for big-name programs. They need a little while to gel. Not this year. I think this team just molds together perfectly.
Well, I want to put a break on that one. I mean, it's only one game. It's only the season opener, but this team did look solid in a lot of areas. We will really see where this team is. This will be the perfect litmus test for this team tomorrow night at 10 p.m. because Kansas is always good every single year. They've got, I mean, like guys like Perry Ellis. That team is always good. So we will see where this team is tomorrow night, Isaac. Game one against a Florida Atlantic team, that's okay, and we'll compete in the Sun Belt at the same time. I think we will really see where the squad is tomorrow against the Jayhawks.
By the same token, though, Al, last year we saw Michigan State start off the year with only a 5-point win against Navy. No sign of that this time around.
Yeah, but still, I think we got to see them against Kansas.
Oh,
first.
I agree, of course.
Also, the MSU women's basketball team, they opened their year yesterday at the Brez with a 78-40 win over Western Michigan. And talk about cool connections with this team. WMU head coach Shane Klipfel, he was an assistant under Susie Merchant while she was, of course, here at Michigan State and even dating back to her time as the coach at Eastern Michigan University. So Shane is now the head coach at WMU. Also on his assistant coaching staff is Satara Washington, former player and former assistant on the coaching staff, with Susie as well. And also Rick Albrin also served as an assistant under Merchant, who is now under Shane Klipfel as well. So I was at the Breslin to cover that game as well. And I had to, you know, ask Shane and also Susie, I mean, what it's like, you know, playing against one another, as you guys have an extensive history of playing for the same team, so to speak.
It's odd. I mean, it was just, it's not something I enjoyed, to be honest with you. Not to get all sappy here, but her and I have been in so many battles in together. It was hard. You know, it was a feeling I really didn't like. I'm a little embarrassed that I'm getting this way, but I didn't show any of this to my team. I have just so much respect and love for Susie Merchant and everything she did for me, and just the fact that they actually would engage in a three-game situation with us. So, but it was odd. I mean, it was a feeling I didn't know what I was going to feel like until the ball went up in the air, and it just, you know, I coached my team, and I didn't change anything that way, but before the game and as soon as the game ended, it was just a feeling in my stomach that was not enjoyable.
Susie, Shane just left here, and he got a bit choked up when he was at the podium when talking about how tough it is going against you. Was it tough for you at all? Was it a bit weird going against him today?
Yeah, I had their whole staff over at my house last night for dinner and a beverage or two, maybe. It was weird. It was awkward, kind of. I don't mean that like people-wise. It just didn't seem right not to be talking about our team, you know. So that was hard for me. I actually said to him before the game, I'm like, I got to raise some money to get out of this contract. He's like, please do, because I don't want to play you. And I'm like, I don't want to play you either. I thought it'd be okay, but both of us after last night and today were like, it's just too hard, you know. I mean, you want to bring people back, but it's just, he worked with me for 14 years. You know, we had a really, really good relationship, and it's just different. You know, it's okay, but it was harder than I thought it was going to be honest.
Yeah, and you can only imagine what's that like to play one of your best friends who you're really close to, who has worked on your assistant coaching staff, and you who you have helped mold into the coach that they are today. Again, WMU head coach Shane Klipfel, assistant for Susie at both EMU and MSU, Broncos assistant Satara Washington and Rick Albrin. They also served as assistants under Merchant. And there is also another cool local connection as Lansing Waverly High grad, who was a standout for the Waverly basketball team during her time in high school, Brianna Mobley. She is now a freshman on that team under Shane. And here's what she had to say.
I think I had like at least 70 people here in my favor. And the first time I thought I was going in, but coach sat me back down. So I was like, ooh, shoot. But then when I went in to hear like all my people behind me was just such like amazing feeling. I felt so blessed. It's been hard because, I mean, I don't have my mom and dad to go home to when things get hard. But my team is amazing, and they are my family. So when, so say, Coach Shane gets after me, I have them to lean on, and that's really been amazing.
Brianna, what's been the biggest thing that you've had to adjust to from looking at your time in high school to the next level now in college? What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
I'm not the biggest person on the court anymore. There's girls twice my size, and I actually have to get lower than them to rebound. I can't just lean over their backs and get the rebound like I used to.
Yeah, and you know what? Brianna had a great game yesterday. She went 2 for 5 from the field. She had 6 points and was able to show that, hey, she can hang with the big dogs. I remember covering her in high school, and, yeah, she was a phenom. She made it look easy because she could just grab rebounds over people and put them up for easy lands. But it was really cool seeing her last night as well. All right, folks, with just 4 minutes left, let's look at the weekend that was in sports and bring to you what we dub as our weekend winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, it is now time for Weekend Winners, where we recap the weekend that was in the sporting world and bring you who we thought had the best weekend in sports. So, for me, I have to start with Kirk Cousins. Wow, did he have a great day on Sunday or what? He threw for 4 touchdowns, and afterwards he handed the game ball over to his dad, who was sadly diagnosed with cancer. His dad was finally healthy enough to attend one of Kirk's games. But Kirk Cousins was absolutely fantastic. He actually had the highest QB rating that a quarterback can accrue in the NFL. Pretty impressive stuff. Also, the Bears beat the Rams, and former MSU running back Jeremy Langford, he had 7 carries for 109 yards and a TD. Jeremy Langford, I tell you what, his game has transitioned very nicely to the next level. Also, Holly Holm, of course, we talked about her knocking out Ronda Rousey for the first time in her career out in Australia. Lansing Catholic, PW, Ithaca, and Grand Ledge, your 4 teams left remaining from Mid-Michigan competing still for a state championship berth. And also Deontay Davis, just the 3rd freshman in MSU history to record a double-double in his debut. And also the movie Home Alone, one of my favorite holiday movies. Home Alone was released 25 years ago on this day. How about that? All right, Isaac, what you got?
What about the other former MSU quarterback, Drew Stanton, the backup for the Cardinals? I don't know if you saw this, but maybe he had the best touchdown dance of all time. He had nothing to do with it, but he just ran up and down the sidelines, gesticulating in ways which I did not think possible. It's the best touchdown dance of all time. I guarantee you, go watch it. Drew Stanton, making MSU alums everywhere proud.
It's fantastic. And actually, I was texting Eric Doc Love of the team 92.1 FM last night, and we were both watching the game and discussing last night's game between the Seahawks and Arizona. And as soon as it happened, Doc texted me and said, Al, I just DVR'd that game just for that moment. It was that good. It was funny stuff. All right, folks. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. We want to give a special thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Monday afternoon. And as always, be easy, people.